A quick program note, please remember that only Tiger Bay members can ask questions of today's speaker. If you'd like to join Tiger Bay, you still can, and please see Walter Peggy in the back. Remember, we're on Facebook and Twitter. Use hashtag Tiger Bay to post comments on today's program. And special thanks to Radio St. Pete and board member and treasurer Joe Bordeaux for always simulcasting our program on Radio St. Pete, that you can listen to the podcast that we will post later to our Facebook page. As everyone knows who's been to a Tiger Bay lunch before, we support our local high school students who have an interest in political science and engaging from an early age in their civic responsibilities. Today we have three students and young Tigers visiting us from all the way from Largo High School. That's not a very close commute, as Mayor Levine is learning Pinellas County is a big county. And we're pleased to welcome Shelby Hammonds, Alexandra Lopez, Kenyatta Siplin, and they are joined by their teacher, Mr. Mike Klapka. If you all can be recognized. Because of their long commute, they're going to have to leave a little bit early today from the lunch. So, Mayor Levine, please know that we have the first question teed up from one of our students, so they get the first question today. On this note, this is the May program and something we're going to try to do at the end of the academic year that we don't always get the chance to do, but we're very happy to do that this year, and award Tiger Bay's Dorothy Ruggles Democracy Scholarship to a graduating senior. At this point, I'd like to invite Harvey Landris and Marilyn Miller, two Tiger Bay board members who headed up this year's scholarship committee, to make our scholarship presentation.
Thank you very much, Tigers. Each year, the Suncoast Tiger Bay Club, in memory of Dorothy Walter Ruggles, she's the former supervisor of elections who passed away in 2000, awards a scholarship to a deserving high school senior in Pinellas County who exemplifies Dorothy's love of democracy. Dorothy loved not only democracy, but political activism and public service, and the selection favors students who demonstrate a true passion for politics through leadership and participation in local organizations. In 2000, the scholarship was renamed the Dorothy Ruggles Democracy Scholarship, which is funded through an endowment with the Pinellas Education Foundation, as well as through direct contributions of Tiger Bay members. The club's annual, by the way, the club's annual membership dues statement includes an option for donation to this fund, which we hope you will make. This year, there were 49 applicants. The winner lives in St. Petersburg and comes from a single-parent family. She excels academically with an unweighted grade point average of 3.91 and a weighted GPA of 4.31. Among her many activities include president of student government at Largo High School, newspaper editor and historian of the National English Honor Society, historian of junior council, vice president of the sophomore council, being a member of the Student Rights and Responsibility Committee, making presentations before the school board as a representative of Largo High School, attending PTA meetings at Frontier Elementary School to translate for Spanish-speaking students and Spanish-speaking parents, being on the City of Largo's Youth Leadership Council, providing reports and updates to the City Commission at their meetings, participating in a number of community service projects, and much, much, much more. We'd like to ask now her mother and her to come up as we announce this year's Dorothy Ruggles Democracy Scholarship winner for $1,000 to Amber Matos Gonzalez.
Congratulations.
We wanted Amber to say a few words, but Mayor Levine said he would not participate if we allowed Amber to speak, because then everybody would want her to run for governor. So. And I've spoken with both in Spanish before, and I can say Amber's Spanish is a little bit better than yours, Mayor. So. But he does have good Spanish. We'll get to that in a little bit. Speaking of our Young Tiger scholarships and also welcoming Young Tigers here, we can't do it without your support. On your table, there are black bowls. If you could just put in a few dollars there, that not only helps the scholarship fund, but helps us bring Young Tigers here to lunches throughout the academic year. The format of today's conversation with Mayor Levine allows for him to give us his 15-minute elevator speech on why he wants to serve as our next governor. It's a big elevator, Mayor, but we think you can do it in 15 minutes. Then the program will allow for 25 minutes of question and answer from Tiger Bay members. Each person has 30 seconds to pose his or her question, and the mayor has 2 minutes to respond, although he tells me that he's going to keep it less than a minute. Today's Tiger Timer is Tiger Bay past president and current board member Corey Adler. At the end of the question session, we have five Tiger Bay board members who will rank each question and select the best one for our prestigious Fang and Claw Award. Today's raters are Harvey Landris, Marilyn Miller, Joanne Lentino, Matt Letelier, and Barkley Harless. The rules for the Fang and Claw question session are on your table. Please remember, only Tiger Bay members and Young Tigers may ask questions, and 30 seconds to ask that question. At this point, I'd like to ask Corey Adler, a Miami native and Tiger Bay board member, to introduce today's featured speaker.
Good afternoon, Tigers. Okay. Good afternoon, Tigers. Thank you. Thank you. So I'll tell you why they asked me to introduce Mayor Levine in a minute. But from his website, Philip Levine is running for governor with a progressive vision to move Florida forward as a leader in the 21st century economy. He wants to revitalize our economy, envisioning a Florida with better paying jobs, blah, blah, blah. And then as governor, he will fight for the real needs of working families in Florida rather than the powerful interest in Tallahassee, blah, blah, blah. So I was asked to do this introduction for a couple of reasons. My sisters and I all were born in Miami Beach at Mount Sinai Hospital. My parents moved there in the 40s. And my Miami was very different than the Miami of today. So we lived in a very beautifully diverse neighborhood. We were very poor, and we were the only Jews in the neighborhood. I used to spend my afternoons pedaling on my bike to my open public beach with my surfboard on my back. There were no waves, so I just had my surfboard on my back, and I did my homework on my surfboard. But I could walk up and down the beach, and literally I would ride my bike right up to the ocean. And now the Miami of my youth is gone. So the beach that I used to ride to is now a concrete corridor that separates the working class from the people who live in those beautiful condos. And I'm sure to those who vacation there, Miami is still a beautiful place. But to those of us who grew up in Miami, and so many of my friends who still live in the same zip code, are still not invited to those parties in downtown. And we still don't get to go on the yachts. And we're still there, plumping up the pillows of the people who vacation. And so for me, I worry about Florida. Florida is very diverse. And I wonder how the mayor will relate to the happiest place on earth in Orlando, to the blueberry farmers in Tampa Bay, to the people who live in Pensacola, who have a military base that runs their economy, while all of us seem to be living in more fractured silos in our state. And I wonder how someone from Miami can relate to all of us and make our state a better place, because I do love Florida and I do love Miami. So my questions include, how are you going to protect us from hurricane damage and sea level rise? My beloved Miami Beach, where my grandmother was, sometimes is flooded. And so I imagine that we can't afford to rise everybody in Florida. So I worry that we're all going to drown. I know, I'm going fast. How do you plan to address mass transit? Is there ever going to be a day that we could actually fly to our state capital? And finally, I'm going to wrap up the big question in the room, from one big Jew from Miami to another, is Florida ready for a Jewish governor in Tallahassee? Please help me welcome Philip Levine.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Corey. Now, that was a great question. So, folks, I have 15 minutes. What I'm going to do is, this elevator pitch is going to be fast so I can get to your questions. First of all, I'm going to answer every single question you asked right there. I'm a kid that was born in Boston, moved down to South Florida when I was 10 years old, of course, brought my parents with me, okay? And I grew up literally in Broward County. I went to public school in Broward County, Addicts Middle School in Hollywood Hills High. Did every job you could possibly imagine. I actually scooped ice cream. I washed cars. I parked cars. I washed dishes. I worked at every place you could imagine. I think I actually washed more cars than any human being in the state of Florida, okay? I'll put a wager on that. And then, of course, I went to college. I went to U of M, University of Michigan. Not that on the U of M, okay? All right? Go blue. Major in political science. Had no idea if I'd ever use that degree. Come back down to South Florida, and like a lot of folks, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Didn't have a job. You know, I grew up with a single mom. Didn't have a family business to go into. And I answered an ad in a paper. A little company by the name of Royal Caribbean was looking to hire someone to come on board their cruise ship. And I went down there and I said, well, they said, how much speaking experience do you have? And I said, oh, I'm a great public speaker and I've got years of experience. I'm 23 years old. Thank God they did no due diligence and there was no internet. They gave me a job. Put me on a cruise ship, a cabin, by the way, a cabin you've never seen before. This one's below the waterline, no porthole, no bathroom. And I thought, I made the worst decision of my life. How do I get off the ship? And I thought, well, I don't know, maybe I'll call the Coast Guard. Maybe they'll get me off. I had $500 to my name. I literally said, I guess I have to stick it out. Said, I'm going to do this speech the next day in the lounge called the Oklahoma Lounge. And I thought, there'll be 30, 40 passengers there. I'll tell them about the ports of call. I get to this lounge, literally like 1,000 cruise passengers. I'm scared to death. The cruise director, British guy, ladies and gentlemen, we have one of the greatest speakers of all time. And all I could think of is, he better not be talking about me. I've never even done it before. But I did it. I spoke, and I fell into this great industry, and I literally worked on more cruise ships. And then I got off, and with $500 and a pocket full of dreams, I built a little company. And that little company grew and grew and grew, and I was fortunate enough to sell it, and I decided I was going to help my community at that point, and I was going to run for mayor. So by the way, if you've ever thought of running for office, I recommend it to all of you, okay? It's kind of like being on that TV show, Survivor. But I did it. Everybody said, very similar to what you said, Corey. They said, how is this guy going to win? There's no way. He's got no name ID. He's got no government experience. I said, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to actually go to the people. So I knocked on 6,000 doors in my community. I literally blew out a pair of Nike Air Max on a flat tire. And all those beautiful condominium buildings, Corey, you're talking about in Miami Beach, I broke into every single one of them, okay? I would go to the top, I would start knocking on doors, and I learned pretty quickly, do not take those elevators, they have security cameras, they'll throw you out so quick, can't imagine. But I went to the people, and when you speak of sea level rise, our city was a city that was filling up with water during sunny days. Matter of fact, we cloned the term sunny day flood right by the beach. Can you imagine our main roads filling up with water? People had no idea what to do. The government, it was like analysis paralysis. They hire consultants and hire consultants and hire consultants. And people that know me, if you can tell by the way I'm speaking, I'm the most impatient human being in the planet, okay? And I said, we're not doing that. Matter of fact, I ran a TV commercial showing me paddling on a kayak down one of our main roads during a flooding incident. And I said, I turned the camera and I said, some people want to be the mayor of Venice. I said, I want to be the mayor of Miami Beach. And I had my boxer dog Earl with me on the kayak. And the water's pouring down his head, and I turn to Earl, and I go, paddle, Earl, paddle! And he looks up at the camera, and he cries. Perfect, we got it on camera. And we put that on TV, we put it at our movie theater. And despite all the skeptics, I won. And I won a landslide with 4 people in the race. But you know the one thing about politics, a lot of politicians don't realize, is that when you make all these promises that you're going to do all these things, you actually have to do them. And of course, in business, I knew that, because that's what I've done my whole life. And I had an entire plan, and we just got to it right away. Number one, invested $500 million. We started raising roads, putting in pumps, raising our seawall, changing our building codes, and lo and behold, where we improved our area, it was as dry as the Sahara. And matter of fact, we continue to learn as we go along. And we became not just a city that shows you can fight back, but we were a city that shows that this is what happens when the globe is warming. This is what's going on with sea level rise. And I was in a documentary with Leonardo DiCaprio called Before the Flood. It's on iTunes. I play the mayor of Miami Beach, a very compelling role. That's good. That was with Al Gore and his film, the Jack Black and National Geographic. But we did it. We did it because we had to do it. And the state of Florida has to do it. And I'll tell you my ideas of what we need to do in the state of Florida. And by the way, it wasn't like you become a mayor of a city that's experiencing sea level rise and you can say, well, just go buy that book. It's chapter 3, section 2. It'll tell you what to do. It doesn't exist. You have to write the book as you're going along. And that's what we did. Number two, we believe that the people of Miami Beach that work at those hotels, they can't afford to live in our city. And they're being underpaid. So you know what I did as mayor? We raised the minimum living wage in the city of Miami Beach. And by the way, the only mayor and the only city to ever do it. Number three, before I became mayor, we had a city where the tail was wagging the dog. We had a police force that was out of control. During Memorial Day weekend, an African-American male was shot over 100-something times in his car and killed. And I said, if I become mayor, I will reform this police department. And by the way, when you say that, you don't get the police endorsement, okay? And I didn't get the police endorsement. That's okay, but I won. And what we did is a national search. We brought in a new police chief from Aurora, Colorado. Dan Oates, the best chief in America, according to President Obama. He was there during that horrible Batman shooting in the theater. And then we brought in a number two, an African-American woman, as a deputy chief, making her the highest-ranking African-American and woman in the history of our city. Changed our majors, changed our captains. We actually, you know, put cameras on our police before Ferguson. And we changed shotgun shells with bean bags, and we began a major transformation of a culture of a police department that needed to do. Built a convention center, ready this summer, on time, on budget. We did so many things. I ran again, became mayor, second term, and everybody said, well, you gotta run a third term, because you'll win, we don't even have an opponent. And I said, I'm not doing it. I know it's unusual, but every single thing I said we were gonna do, we've done it. And if it's not totally finished, it's in process. I said, I think I wanna travel the state, I think I run for governor. And by the way, when I started to do that, it was difficult. It was just like when I ran for mayor. Everybody said, this guy has no chance. Then it went to, oh, he's a long shot. And then it went to, well, he has a shot. Okay? And of course, today they're all saying, oh my God, he's a front runner. He has a real shot to become governor. What is it? What is he doing? Why is it? How can this Miami Beach June Democrat even possibly resonate statewide? So let me tell you what I found out, folks. I found out that people in Florida all want the same thing. They want clean water. They want better education. They want higher-paying jobs. They want better environmental policies. They want non-discrimination policies. And they want better public transportation. I have not met a Republican or a Democrat or an Independent doesn't want all those things. Pretty much everybody wants the same things. We are not as divided as people or the world tries to make us. We're not. So I always tell her, I'm pro-people and I'm pro-business. I'm not right. I'm not left. I'm forward. I'm honored to be running as a Democrat. But before I am a Democrat, I am an American. And nobody has a monopoly of good ideas. Not Republicans, not Democrats, and not Independents. Now, the Democratic Party, they all talk about these progressive values. Progressive. What are your progressive credentials? And I'll explain to everybody that it's very interesting. Because people will say, how can you be pro-business and be a Democrat? I said, well, have you ever taken a look at the human resources manual of the most admired companies in America? I don't care if it's Amazon, eBay, Apple, GE, Lockheed, I don't care if it's Disney, I don't care which company it is. They're all the same. They are all pro-education. They're all pro-healthcare. They're all pro-environment. They are all anti-discrimination. Matter of fact, if we want them to come anywhere, they really want great public transportation. So are they Democrat or they Republican? They're neither. What they have learned is if you take care of your people really well, your people will take care of you, and the organization will thrive. And it doesn't make a difference if it's GE or if it's the state of Florida. So what we have today, and why I believe we can become a 21st century economy, is if we start doing those things. There are those right now in Tallahassee that believe the 21st century economy is the state of Walmarts, Applebee's, and McDonald's. I don't believe in that vision. I believe we can become something better. I believe that we can take our space coast and NASA, and we can turn it into our Silicon Valley. I believe if we invest in our education, that they shall come. Can you imagine if you're Jeff Bezos right now, the founder and CEO of Amazon? You know, Amazon's traveling the world looking for their second world headquarters. They want to plop down $5 billion and employ 50,000 people. So I want you to imagine Jeff sitting there in Seattle, Washington, around a conference room table, and he's saying, okay, let's look, state of Florida, huh? Okay, they're ranked 45th in education, and their teachers are paid $9,000 less. You know what he says? Next, okay? That's what he says. Because I come from a little town called Boston in a state called Massachusetts. And let me tell you about Massachusetts, okay? Unfortunately, the taxes are too high. The wages are very high, and the weather's horrible, okay? But you know what they have? They have every great company starting there and relocating there in 128. High tech, biotech, they've got it. And you know why they've got it? It's not because you got a governor running around the state saying, we'll give you $5 million if you consider coming here. By the way, you don't move the needle on a $50 billion company offering that. That's not what they care about. The reason Massachusetts thrives is that they have the best education, they have great public transportation, they have a culture of excellence, and that's why they are who they are and where they're going. And that's what we need to do in the state of Florida going forward. So we're everywhere. We're nonstop. We've opened an office in Tampa. We've opened an office in St. Pete. We've opened in Kissimmee. We're opening in Broward this weekend. We're opening up through the entire panhandle. And as far as someone saying, hey, how can this kid from Miami Beach, it just doesn't seem possible. Well, let me just tell you this. And I'm going to say it, and I'm going to put a big disclaimer on. First of all, we are running a 67-county campaign everywhere. We're nonstop. We fly into counties. I don't care if there's 5 Democratic voters. We go there. There's nowhere we won't go. That's where we're opening offices. But the one thing I learned, folks, and I want you to hear me, but I want you to understand that we take this very seriously, is that, you know, South Florida, we found out, has a lot of people. I don't know if you checked, okay? All right? And number two, for a Democrat, there seems to be a lot of Democrats down there. And number three, the last time I looked, I was the only candidate from there. As a matter of fact, as you just said, I think I'm the only candidate that speaks Spanish on both sides of the aisle. Maybe that's why we reached so hard and done so well with the Puerto Rican community. I said, we love Tampa, we love St. Pete, and we're honored to have two offices here. But I know one thing. I know that the change that we're going to see in Florida is the most important change. We know that so goes this race for governor, so goes the presidency in 2020 going forward. And that may mean something to some of you, it means a lot to you. We don't run around the state campaigning against the president. I know there's a lot of people that voted for him and they thought they were going to Harvard University and they ended up at Trump University, okay? All right? But let me tell you about those people. They're still looking for an answer. They're still looking for a solution. They're still looking for somebody, and it's not about party, and it's not about policy. It's about person. That's what people vote for. So going forward, I'm so happy to have the opportunity to speak to all of you, and I can go on and on and on, but I'd rather have questions from every single one of you. So thank you so much for the opportunity. What they've actually done. When someone's going to potentially run an $89 billion organization, I can tell you that, like in business, we can really care less if we're asking you what you're going to do in the future. We actually want to know what you've done. So when it comes to disabilities, let me tell you what my track record has been. Number one, I've sat on the board of an organization called Best Buddies. It was put together by the Kennedy family. And Best Buddies organizations assist those folks with disabilities, developmental disabilities. And what one of their greatest strengths are is a work program. As the mayor of Miami Beach, we hired what we call Best Buddies and put them in jobs so they can be productive to themselves, their family, and to society. In my company, we have a best buddy working in my company. One of the most important things I think we can do for folks with disabilities is make sure that we give them the opportunity to enter the workforce. And as governor, I will take our policies and make sure that we have people working with disabilities in every single department in the entire state of Florida government going forward. And I think that's something that we all should consider doing in our companies and whatever it is in our foundation. I believe we need to offer greater job training for folks with disabilities to make sure that they're able to work. So in Miami Beach, one of the things we did, which I look back at it with big pride, is that we created the first adaptive beach ever, where folks that were in wheelchairs, whether by war injuries or whether by accidents or they were born that way, that they have a beach that they can go to and enjoy the beach. And as easy to think that may sound, it was one of the hardest fights we ever had. We had one of the hardest fights. We had commissioners that were voting against it because they had buildings of residents that didn't want to have those people next to their building in the beach. And what I said to those commissioners that day, as I said, long after politics are over, you will look at yourself in the mirror and you'll ask yourself, did you do the right thing? So, thank you.
Sitting in the at-large seat in Pinellas County Schools. If you were sitting in the governor's seat after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas situation that happened in Parkland, what would be your first reaction and your first game plan to secure that schools would be safe?
Joanne, thank you very much for that question. As a Broward County High graduate, a parent, a lot of us here, it's tragic for every single one of us. But the issue is why didn't we do something after Pulse? Why did it have to happen? Why did the shooter not have mental health administration? Why was he out on his own? Why didn't we intervene? So let me tell you what we did. Let me tell you what I would have done. Number one, we banned assault rifles in Miami Beach, I think, over 2 years ago. Okay? But it's not enforceable because those folks in Tallahassee want to preempt everybody's rights. So, of course, we're not able to do that. Number two, we led a tremendous rally and march that we sponsored with 20-something buses of teachers and students that descended on Tallahassee on the first day that they were going to discuss the issue going forward. And of course, we went out there as aggressively as possible. As governor, number one, what I would do is I would go right to the legislature and use all my power, all my ability, all my persuasive ability is to get the right laws passed to ban assault rifles in the state of Florida. Number two, better background checks. Number three, making sure folks with mental health issues are unable to buy weapons. But as governor, if I could not convince the legislature to do that, I would have gone to the people. And what we're going to do, and I believe it will happen, is we're going to take it to the people of Florida via a referendum and ask the people of Florida, would you like to ban assault rifles? And number two, would you like your local elected leaders to have the ability to regulate their own gun safety laws in their community? And I think the people of Florida will say absolutely yes. Do I think we need to harden our schools? Yes, no question. We have a TSA, we need an ESA, an Education Security Administration. Do I believe we should arm our teachers? Absolutely no. We need to arm them with bigger paychecks. We don't need to arm them with weapons, right? Absolutely no. If my teachers had guns when I was there, especially the substitute teachers, I may not be here today, okay? I can tell you that. We're happy, but we're humble, we're confident, but we're not cocky. We work every day. But regarding having a Republican on the ticket, what happens is people throw things like that out, but they don't look at the law, and it's very clear in the party that you're not able to have someone else from the party on your ticket unless they registered with that party affiliation 1 year of advance of qualifying. So it's not even a possibility going forward. But I can tell you this, as I tell everybody, you know, everyone knows that I am somebody that does not believe anyone has a monopoly on good ideas. But the only way we're going to get anything done in a purple state is to be able to have unity together. I don't want this election to be about winners and losers. I want everybody to win in this election. Our state has been the source, unfortunately, of embarrassment around the country way too many times. Here is the opportunity for us to show the country that we can get it right and bring people together. And that's what part of this campaign is truly about, bringing people together. So, thank you. Yes.
My name is Bill Dudley. I am a fellow Bostonian.
Hey.
And educator. This has to do with education. Major part of funding for schools is based on FTE funding. FTE is determined by the number of students in the classroom or seat time. Since the advent of virtual schools, students can take courses online, which means they don't count the seat time. This result is a loss of revenue of school systems throughout the state, which leads to program cuts and teacher layoffs.
Question.
My question is, how are you going to offset the lost revenue to ensure financial stability for our schools to operate?
Great question from a fellow Bostonian. Went to Edward Devotion Elementary School.
Belmont,
okay. So this is the bottom line. When I started in business, they teach you this one golden rule. You know what that rule is? You don't invest in your competition, okay? It sounds pretty easy, but it's true. Right now, we have a cottage industry of charter schools. And we have all these folks that are in Tallahassee that work 2 months a year. This one's a lawyer who represents a charter school. This one's a consultant for a charter school. This one gets campaign cash from a charter school. This one has PAC cash. The bottom line is, if you want to have the best education, don't invest in your competition. Actually invest in your education. So what I plan to do in everything in my abilities is to take money that we're putting in someone else's business and actually put it in our business, which is called the public school. And I think it's way too long that we haven't done. So can you imagine if all of a sudden you woke up one day and you found out that we're investing taxpayer money in FedEx, DHL, and UPS, but we're not putting it in the post office? We're in the post office business. What are we going to do? Start the post office? Why did we put in our competition? No. We are in the public school business, and right now we're failing. And we need to make our public schools the best in the nation, not ranked in the 45th in the nation like that. We will not get a 21st century economy accomplished here with education the way we have it. We got to pay our teachers way more. Please remember. Sir.
Mayor Lee, excuse me. My name is Bill Loughran, and at a time whenever the legislature and the budget session is always scrambling for scarce resources, blowing up their money, we have seen this year almost a 90% cut in funding for the arts. And many small communities throughout the state have seen their budgets cut to about 10% of what they've been in the past, which really is a disastrous problem. And we'd like to know what your view is for funding for the arts program. Thank you.
Thank you. Great question on funding for the arts. So in Miami Beach, as you know the history of Miami Beach, we went from being the most luxurious boot camp during World War II to being the place the Rat Pack hung out to where Jackie Gleason repositioned his show, and then we went into disrepair. City went down, Paradise Lost, according to Toronto Time Magazine. And all of a sudden, people discovered our Art Deco district. And the next thing you know, photographers and artists came to Miami Beach. And the next thing you know, we attracted this little Super Bowl of art called Art Basel that came to Miami Beach. I'm proud to tell you that one of the last things I did before I left office was sign a 5-year contract with Art Basel, which means it's like signing 5 Super Bowls going forward with a $500 million of economic impact per year. So as mayor of Miami Beach, they used to have a city that was the fun and sun capital of the world. Is the fun, sun, arts, and cultural capital of the world. And I understand the economic benefits of an art and cultural investment in your community. It all is in the circle of life, like in Lion King. You have to do it all if you want that type of economy. So I think I'm especially knowledgeable of it, having been the mayor of Miami Beach, understanding the impact of what the arts have done to Miami and Miami Beach. And I believe it's important for us to fund arts statewide.
Robert Eschenfelder, please complete the following sentence. When Graham would be a worse governor for the state of Florida than you because?
You know what? I got to tell you something. I tell everyone the same thing. I don't comment on my votes. say it in my same comment. Yeah. There's four Democrats running for the nomination for governor. And the one thing I am sure of is any of the four of us become governor, our state will be in way better shape than it is today. How do you guys know?
I'm the Florida Director of Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. I appreciate your leadership on climate change, and I know the current price tag in Miami Beach is about $600 million, I was last told, in raising the roads and pump. Can you speak to the issue of climate liability, and since instead of the taxpayers being stuck with those big bills in Miami, and like we will be here, like how we might pay for that?
Great question. So, because of all the work we did in climate change in Miami Beach, I was honored to receive the highest honor from the President of France, called the Officer in the Legion of Honor from the Nation of France, because of the innovative things we were doing towards climate change. I believe that we need to do many things. We led the Sierra Club Ready for 100 effort, where the City of Miami Beach said we will be fully based on renewable energy by 2035. We made the commitment, and other cities around the state joined forces with us. I believe we need to invest in resiliency. We need to achieve environmental resiliency officers. We need regional environmental resiliency officers. But what we need to do to get really specific with your question is, we need to, number one, have everyone ever noticed we're the Sunshine State, not the Partly Cloudy State, okay? We need to be the leader in solar energy. And if we know one thing, the Saudi Arabians have the largest fossil fuel reserve in the world, and they're investing billions of dollars in solar energy. So are the Chinese. Florida needs to take the lead. We can build a great economy, great jobs out of it. But I also know that as we grow, these impact fees that developers pay, they must cover the resiliency concerns that we have going forward. Because as you said, Corey, can't keep building all the way up to the water's edge if the water's going to be in your living room, okay? But we need to make sure that we provide, that we create. So it's something that we can access the federal government. There's no question about it. But the one thing I think is really important is that we're not going to get anyone to invest in our state if we're not investing in the future of our state through environmental resiliency programs going forward. It's crucial for the future of our state. So thank you.
Thanks for being here. Mark O'Hara, I run a large nonprofit child care agency serving mostly low and moderate income families, and mostly funded through subsidized child care through the state. We love the idea of the living wage that you're talking about, but the current rates are three-fourths of the prevailing market rate, so the state is way below what it takes to be competitive. How do you propose to increase funding so that we can actually pay a
little bit? How do we increase funding? Well, the actual living wage needs to be paid by the private developer, the private owners of the companies. When everyone says, well, that one McDonald's, well, I feel so concerned about them that they'll pay a living wage. Well, let me tell you about that one McDonald's. That one McDonald's is actually 180 McDonald's owned by a private equity group out of Chicago, by the way, and they're so love Florida because you subsidize their employee costs. So I think the bottom line is, think of these zillions of dollars of savings we can have in social services if people actually pay a wage that people can live on. So as a taxpayer, who would you like to see pay? Would you like to pay in social services? Or would you like the company that's hiring them to actually pay their people a living wage? And I tell my Republican friends all the time, I said, this is not a Democratic issue, this is a Republican issue. I said, I don't want any Republicans that like subsidizing someone else's business. And that's what we're doing, the taxpayers. So I believe that it's going to be done through the private sector, but it has to be done out of Tallahassee. We passed the referendum way back that basically the people of Florida voted on. They said they, local communities, want the right to set their own minimum living wage. But then the Kremlin, Tallahassee, decided that they didn't like what the local communities had to say, so they just decided to do whatever they want. And as you know, they're running their operation out of their life. The former Soviet Union used to run central planning in Moscow, okay? They don't listen. We grew up learning that Thomas Jefferson, what he said is government works best closest to his people. But that seems to be lost. What we need to do is bring it back to the local governments. Let them make their decisions locally. They can govern best when they're closest to the people. And that includes a minimum living wage going forward. Yes?
Bruce Marger. I appreciate your support for public education.
Yes.
and to have money go to public education. Are you in favor of the homestead exemption increase on the Constitution? And if so, what will be the effect on school funding?
So, yes, I'm in favor of it, because I believe that if we can give homeowners some relief, we should do it. However, with that said, I believe that the state will need to pick up any loss of essential service revenue needs, and we will do that as governor. So, yes, I believe we should give them relief, but I also believe what we need to do, from a state point of view, be able to come in and absorb any potential shortfalls that would ever come from that. But you know what? It's an interesting thing. Think about this about our budget. Think about the opportunities we have in prioritizing our budget. Think about what we get. We have a 5.5% corporate tax in our state. And by the way, that's a very fair tax, but it's a very low tax. And I don't think we should ever raise it. What you don't think we actually should do is collect it and not give anyone actually any tax loopholes, or we should give any corporate incentives. Or by the way, we should make sure that we have combined corporate reporting, so that you're not shifting income from this state to somewhere else, we don't get our fair share. I travel the world. I've never heard anyone say Florida's a high-tax state. Never heard that before in my life. And we don't want to be a high-tax state, but we want everyone to pay their fair share going forward. So.
Can I follow up on that?
No,
no, okay. Peter Schorsch. You have a very progressive agenda. Probably the most progressive agenda, give or take, you or Andrew Dillon. But even if you're elected governor, you will be 90% likely to go up against a Republican Senate and almost certainly a Republican House. What will the first year of a Levine governor's term look like? How will you get along with the legislative leaders that are opposed strenuously to your progressive agenda?
Thank you, Peter. You know, funny, I don't think my agenda is progressive. I think my agenda is pro-business. If I'm progressive, then I guess Lockheed's progressive, Boeing's progressive, GE's progressive. All these companies we wish to attract are progressive, I guess. But to answer your question, first of all, I'm not so sure 90% is the percentage I would use. Okay, there's a little bit of a blue wave, blue tsunami going on. We don't know where it's going to go, but a lot of these special elections are showing that a lot of Democrats are going to win. But barring that, yes, a lot of the changes in seats will happen. Some of them will go Democrat. But I know one thing. I built all my companies. I did everything in my life working with Republicans and Democrats. I never said, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican. I never did that. Okay? And I think that when you come with an economic message, and you're a self-made entrepreneur, and you're pro-business, I don't know many Republicans that aren't pro-business. And that's something else I think, Peter, is that we get a lot of support from Republicans. When you look at folks that are supporting our campaign, some of the biggest, greatest Republican entrepreneurs are involved in our campaign. And I'm proud that they are. And I believe those entrepreneurs will be able to put pressure on some of those folks in Tallahassee to help us push forward. Jose Oliva is going to be the Speaker of the House. Jose is a friend of mine. I remember I had lunch with Jose 6 months ago. And I said, Jose, I said, you'll be the Speaker. If I'm honored to be the governor, the one thing I know is you won't get what you want. I said, but I won't get what I want, but we'll get what we need to move forward together. And I believe that's the key, moving forward together. And I believe that I'm uniquely qualified to be able to do that because of my background in my life.
Scott McIntyre with Solar Energy Management. I'd like to ask you a question about the political reality of the last 20 years. Republicans have owned this state. So how do you plan on getting votes north of Broward and Dade County?
Well, I can tell you this, just based on recent polling, we seem to be the front runner there, okay? And I think that as we continue to go forward, and our offices are open, and our message seems to resonate, I think we will be able to, and I think we are showing that we are. We're pulling Democratic primary. Obviously, there's been polls out there that show me against the two Republicans, and it shows that I beat both of them. And maybe it has a little something to do with my background, something to do with the fact that, you know, I'm kind of creating companies and businesses, and a lot of folks in Northern Florida that work every day that don't believe that being in government your whole life is kind of the best background for government, okay? Doesn't seem to resonate in my direction. When I ran for mayor, I was running against somebody that had been in government his whole life. Matter of fact, he was about to be anointed. And I remember we would go into debates, and they would say, Levine has never even been to City Hall. And I would say, listen, my opponent, he knows everything about government. He knows so much, he's been in City Hall. We cannot use that against him in this debate. It's just not fair, okay? Right? So when I look at folks who have different backgrounds to me, I think it's the same thing. And I think I get this weird feeling. I don't know if you've heard it. We seem to be electing a lot of business people these days. Okay? It's very, very strange. And I think that going forward, I think we'll have the same trend. Yes.
Hi, sir. Thank you for coming today. What are your thoughts on the government supporting the entertainment industry in Florida and professional sports teams?
Thank you. Let's break them up into two things. Film, TV, production industry. By the way, our governor has chased them to Georgia. It's unbelievable. I thought he was running for governor of Georgia, okay? I mean, literally, this is an industry where for pennies, you actually get dollars back. Let me tell you how it works. If your core competency just happens to be tourism, and you actually want to get the images of your state all over the world on TV and motion pictures for pennies, you actually help and welcome the TV production and film industry to Florida. That's called a no-brainer, okay? Now, the bottom line is it has to come with a $1 billion or $1.5 billion industry attached to it. So what I plan to do if I'm honored to be governor is we're going to roll out the red carpet and bring the TV and film industry back to Florida post-haste. Okay? It's a no-brainer. Regarding subsidizing someone else's business, like, by the way, someone owns a sports team. I love them. I'm a big Dolphin fan, Heat fan. I love what the Lightning are doing. I hope that they beat the Capitals. I can't wait. Okay? But by the way, that's someone else's business. Okay? So why would we want to take your money and subsidize someone else's business? We wish them all luck. I hope they're as profitable as can be. But why would we want to start putting our money in someone else's business? And that's all it is. It's a business. If the state of Florida would like to go buy an NFL team, okay, great. Go buy an NFL team. But we're not going to go invest in someone else's NFL team. And I wish them all luck. So I think it's the wrong thing to ever get in the habit of doing.
Thank you. Robert Perdue, City Council of Gulfport. For a believer, we're not going to get anywhere in the state unless we get light rail. But for this area and throughout the state, what's your proposition?
Well, number one, I think we need high-speed rail. I think when you're sitting there on an I-4 corridor and you're sitting there in traffic, not being with your family and not being productive, I don't believe there's one person there that doesn't think we don't need high-speed rail. So the issue with high-speed rail is this. We have the bright lights, Miami going up to Orlando. It's a great concept. Makes a lot of sense. The problem that they have had, what we cannot get into the habit of doing, is ignoring local communities' input. If you don't listen to the local communities where your train is going to be running through, then you're going to run into problems. So yes, I'm a big believer we need high-speed rail. It needs to be a public-private partnership. You cannot create a 21st century economy in the state of Florida unless you connect all our cities together. The traffic's insane. The flight service is difficult. So we need it. It's a priority. But we got to do it the right way and take the input from the local communities that will be affected to make sure they are, quote, on board with the concept. Yes.
Derek Hartfield, highly elevated. Question for you. As a fellow entrepreneur, what's your perspective on managing workers' compensation?
Say it again?
What's your perspective on managing workers' compensation?
Well, listen, we got to make sure they're fair. And that they're covered. We got to make sure that everyone is covered. That's something which to me is something that we need to be involved in, but make sure they're fair. Like, that's the key going forward. And anything we can do to do so, it's something that we can do. Yeah. Sure.
Betty Morgan,
Hi.
My question has to do with people coming out of prison where the current administration, and for many times before this, have made it very difficult, if not impossible, for these people to get their rights back. Talk to that, please.
Thank you. First of all, we are a nation of second chances. We're a state of second chances. People come here from all over the world for their second chance. In order for us to make sure that those folks that have committed crimes in their background, as long as they've paid their debt to society, they should be given their ability to vote back immediately. And I believe what's the goal? Is our goal to reduce recidivism? Is our goal to make sure that they don't go back to prison? Is our goal to rehabilitate these people? Or do we want to kind of make them more a scarlet letter for the rest of their lives and feel that there's no hope? I think we all agree. We want to make sure that they can enter society and be productive. And we need to do everything in our power to help them to do that. So I believe this amendment is going to pass, and if I'm honored to be governor, we will have a process in place where it happens fast, quick. They get their voters' rights this year. Thank you.
Yes. Peter Goldema, if you as governor, is there something that you can do to improve the Affordable Care Act in the state of Florida?
Well, I can tell you one thing we do is we would accept Medicaid expansion money, okay? That's number one. What the governor did was despicable. For political, ideological purposes, he refused the Medicaid expansion money. Meanwhile, we have 1.6 million that are uninsured in the state. Can you imagine, you're on Team Florida, we're building a 21st century culture and economy, but we have people that don't have health insurance? Health insurance should not be a privilege for the few. It should be the right of all Floridians to have health insurance going forward. And I believe that doesn't mean that you have a single payer. It doesn't mean there's one solution. I believe that the Affordable Health Care Act can be made better. I believe, unfortunately, for political purposes, it's been beat to death, and they're cutting it with a thousand cuts to destroy it. The fact is it's not perfect, but we can build upon it going forward. If you can't afford health insurance by any means, we need to provide it to you. If you can afford it, it needs to be affordable. We do not want the emergency rooms of our state to once again become the health care provider of Floridians. That's going backwards. And as governor, we will accept money, we will ask for more money, but the one thing I know is there's no just silver bullet. I ask all health care professionals, tell me the greatest plan. No one has it. If I'm governor, we're going to put together the best and the brightest in one room. Health care professionals, patients, doctors, nurses, hospital administrators. And if we can't find the model out there, we need to look at creating our own model, and maybe we will have the model that the rest of the nation will look at and be excited about going forward.
This is the last question.
Sure.
Your name.
I want to follow up on Bruce Marcher's question about homestead tax exemption.
Sure.
You favor the increase in the homestead tax exemption. But local elected officials in Pinellas County have said that will really crimp us, hurt us. And your answer to that was, well, I'll tell the legislature to pick up the slack. Where's the money going to come from?
The money's going to come from the budget. The money's going to come from a growing economy. The money's going to come from making sure we don't give money away in tax incentives and tax loopholes. If I'm governor, one thing we're going to do is collect every single penny and make sure everyone pays their fair share. And I believe that we'll be able to use that money to make any shortfall that possible. But I think also that if we can give people an opportunity to have a little bit of relief with their homestead, I think it's the right thing to do. That's my belief. Thank you all so much for the opportunity. Feel free to take a look at my website, PhilipLevine 2018. Rhymes.
Thanks. Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. If you could stick around, I will award the Fang and Claw, and part of the honor of the Fang and Claw is to allow them to get a picture with you as well.
Sure, absolutely.
While we wait for Walt to tabulate those, we do have a parting gift for you, for your Miami Beach office, a Tiger Bay coffee mug.
Thank you.
And then, Walt, if you could... want to remind everyone, again, tomorrow you'll receive your email for the June 14th Jonah Goldberg luncheon, and please sign up quickly, as that will be expected to sell out.
Great.
So today's Fang and Claw Award winner, if he's still here, is the fellow Bostonite, Mr. Dudley, former council member. We should note, Mayor, Mr. Dudley's brother is a big lobbyist in the state, in the city of Tallahassee, working on the on behalf of home rule. So you're hopefully in good company here. So Mr. Dudley, if you could come up for your photo with Mayor Levine, we greatly appreciate it. Thank you all again for attending. We'll see you next month.
You've been listening to a live broadcast of today's Suncoast Tiger Bait Club Luncheon. The former mayor of Miami Beach, Philip Levine, was our speaker. And Mayor Levine is a Democratic candidate for governor of Florida. Be sure to watch our RadioSaintPete.com website for information on all upcoming live events. Tomorrow at this time, we will be at St. Pete Beach, the Tradewinds Grand Island Resort, for the Tourism Luncheon, the annual Tourism Luncheon presented by the Tampa Bay Beaches Chamber of Commerce. We'll be on the air live at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern Daylight Time, for conversations with some of the participants in the program, and then we'll bring you the actual program at the noon hour tomorrow. This has been a live public affairs presentation of RadioSaintPete.com. I'm Joe Bordeaux, speaking from the Yacht Club in downtown St. Petersburg, returning you to our studios.